I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Bill Donabedian. Bill is the founder of the Bunbury and Buckle Up Music Festivals. But Bill, you have quite the interesting and really intriguing background. It's fascinating to me. The last time you were our guest, you were the managing director of Fountain Square.
That's correct.
And you completely, in my mind, had a hand in transforming our city's urban core in terms of events and things that go on to the square.
Thank you. That's a lot of people involved in making that happen, but thank you very much.
There are a lot of people, but you were running the show when they first reopened Fountain Square. And you really got to that gig because you also co-founded the Midpoint Music Festival back in 2002.
And I think that's how my whole event business, I guess, got started because of that. And that was just because I was a local music who wanted to shine some light on our local music scene. And that's what got Midpoint started, and it's just been building on that ever since.
So now you're running these two music festivals currently. You said you were and are a musician. You're a drummer.
Yes.
So that's where all this love for music and entertainment and so forth come from.
Yeah, I've been playing music in one way, shape, or form since the fourth grade when I started taking piano lessons and took on drums in high school. I actually started college. I was a music major and switched to general business. So really, I just took my passion for music and my general business degree and put them together.
Well, this sounds really interesting. So the Bunbury Music Festival, which is July 11th through the 13th, the Buckle Up Music Festival is
the 18th through the 20th.
And you've got some amazing bands. I mean, people that I even know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alabama, Willie Nelson, the band. You know, I'm from West Virginia, just so you know.
Okay.
So these are really hitting home for me. Yeah. That's wonderful.
And Emmylou Harris. I mean, she's a legend too. We are so happy about this lineup. There aren't many country music festivals. And, you know, we told a lot of people in the industry we were going to do this. I think we've come out guns blazing here and surprised a lot of people.
Well, and the Buckle Up Festival was a good segue from Bunbury because you're able to use a lot of the same setup and stages. It's the following week.
Yes, it's a fantastic way to leverage that infrastructure. The most expensive thing is setting that all up and paying for renting it. But once you set it up, and a lot of rentals are monthly, it just makes a lot of economic sense.
So you've got the Bunbury Music Festival, then the Buckle Up Music Festival.
Yes.
And if people listening would like more information, because we've got folks listening from Lexington to West Virginia, how can they find that information?
Well, for Bunbury, it's the bunburyfestival.com, and Bunbury is spelled B-U-N-B-U-R-Y. And for the Buckle Up Festival, it's buckleupfestival.com.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you so much.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Bill Donabedian. Bill is the founder of Bunbury Music Festival, as well as the Buckle Up Music Festival, which is new this year. And Bill, how did you get your ideas for starting these festivals?
Honestly, it was right after doing Midpoint. I thought the next step for the city was to have the major summer music festival. But it only took me about 10 or 11 years to finally get there.
You took a little sideways stint through the city of Cincinnati, right?
Exactly.
Managing Fountain Square?
Exactly. So it just seemed like a natural progression.
Well, I know people have told me that they're amazed at not only what great music there is, but how well organized the festival is.
I think I pride myself on my organizational skills, project management skills, and the team that I have. Some of these people started with me at Midpoint and even at Fountain Square. And I'm drawn to people who are extremely proactive and well organized.
And you're mentioning Midpoint Music Festival, and that's an event that you also founded several years ago.
Yes, that was in 2002. And then Sean, Riney, and I co-founded that event, and we sold it to City Beat in 2008.
In addition to it just being fun, let's talk about why these kinds of events, these music festivals, are such a huge deal in terms of economic impact for our city.
Well, it brings a lot of people into town. There's no question about it. I mean, we spend a lot of money anyways just producing the fest, and a lot of that money stays here in the greater Cincinnati area. But we have people from all over the United States and even Canada, the UK, Europe. We have people coming from all over.
So it's just an all-day festival. People can walk around from venue to venue, stage to stage, listen to all these different great bands.
Yeah, we have tons of activities, food, beer, pop, you name it.
And the dates are?
Well, Bunbury is the 11th through the 13th of July, and the following weekend, July 18th through the 20th, is Buckle Up.
So if folks listening would like to get information, understand a little bit more about how the logistics works, what's the website?
Bunburyfestival.com and buckleupfestival.com.
So anticipate how many people attending this?
Bunbury, we'll probably see well over 60,000 people over those 3 days. Buckle Up, it's a first year. I'm expecting about 50,000. But to be honest, this is a huge country market and it's being very well received. So it could be big.
Bill Donabedian. Bill is the founder of Bunbury Music Festival, as well as the Buckle Up Music Festival, which is new this year.
Well, thank you so much for everything you do for our community, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you for being our guest and for putting on great music shows for Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, the United States is an entrepreneurial country built on the spirit of hard work and dedication. Millions of people own a business that they love and are passionate about. However, one thing, one issue that most business owners face that they compare to having a tooth pulled is when they talk about taxes.
In other words, when they talk about paying taxes and sometimes even understanding taxes.
And even though as a business owner, you don't have to be a tax expert, you certainly don't need to understand and recite the Internal Revenue Code, you do need a basic understanding of how taxes impact your business. I mean, it's just critical so that you can talk to your advisors, ask questions. No one is going to care more about your business than you do.
Well, that's right. And no one knows more about your business than you do. And even though you don't know as much about the tax law as hopefully your tax advisor does, you have to explain enough about your business so that the tax advisor can give you advice that will be helpful in saving taxes.
And certainly most expenses that you pay out of your business that you incur in the ordinary course of business are deductible. There certainly are a few that aren't, and some of those deductions have limitations, but many and most things are deductible. However, one deduction that I think is often overlooked is something called the domestic production activity deduction, and it's generally available for anyone that produces anything in the United States. It's not just for people who manufacture.
It's a deduction that doesn't show up on your accounting records because you're not actually expending that amount. You just get a deduction on your tax return for it, which is a great deduction.
Yes, you're already paying the expenses. You just get another deduction on top of whatever the original one is. So certain industries that are affected by this deduction include agriculture, construction, certain types of architectural and engineering, software development. There are many types of companies, many types of businesses that may benefit from this extra deduction that don't even realize that they can qualify.
Well, and that's just one example. There's also credits such as research credits that many companies are entitled to and they overlook.
You know, credits are beautiful because unlike a deduction, which reduces taxable income, a credit reduces tax dollar for dollar. And you mentioned the R&D credit. It expired at the end of last year, at the end of 2013. But I think most people think it's going to be resurrected again in 14. You can amend your returns, though. If you did qualify for the research and development credit, you can go back and amend returns if it makes sense.
Yes, and the DPAD deduction also, which we've done for a number of businesses.
Certainly the key here as a business owner, just to know what you're entitled to in terms of business deductions, credits, or at least know enough to ask good questions of your professional advisors. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, a lot of business owners and other high-income individuals that filed their tax returns for 2013 already noticed that they paid more tax than they had in previous years. That's because of the new higher rates that were enacted, as well as the tax on investment income that was enacted under the Obamacare legislation, as well as the phase-outs of deductions that was reinstated in the law.
Yes, there were a lot of new types of tax that hit people, all adding up to a significant amount of additional tax that many people had to pay. And those are the individuals who have businesses that are treated as pass-through entities, LLCs, S-corporations, partnerships. That's in contrast to businesses that are operated as C-corporations, where the business itself pays its own tax. The C-corporation tax rate is actually less than the individual tax rate currently.
That's right. Prior to 2013, the top rate for corporations and individuals, nominally at least, was 35% for each. Now, For individuals, you can have a tax rate that's effectively as high as almost 45%, whereas the corporate rate is still at 35%. So a lot of people are saying, should I be a C Corp for my business?
Well, certainly the answer to that is it all depends. It depends on your situation today, as well as what you intend to do with your business in the future. You cannot make a hasty decision to change into a C corporation just because the tax rate happens to be a bit lower right now.
Right. And it also depends on what may happen in the future with the tax laws. And we know that we can't predict that with a great deal of certainty. But one thing that you do need to know is if you're a C Corp and you sell your business or really just want to get the income that you've accumulated out of the business, then you pay tax again as an individual, even though the corporation has paid tax. And that could drive your effective rate up over 50%.
Yes. And that double taxation that you just mentioned is the biggest argument against being a C Corp, because that can cost people millions of dollars upon an ultimate sale that they may not otherwise have to pay. So you just have to really think about your goals today and your objectives in the future. Don't make a hasty decision. It could save you a lot of money. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, we're both certified forensic financial analysts, and even though we don't like to be called in to investigate a fraud, we still use our skills to help businesses minimize the opportunity from a fraud occurring in the first place. I think it's something critical that business owners need to pay attention to, be on the alert for, because generally, it's one of your most trusted employees who have the opportunity. They're the ones that's going to end up stealing from you.
Well, and odds are if you get in a room with five other business owners, two of them will probably have been involved in businesses where fraud occurred. So it's a very common occurrence. And particularly in closely held businesses, small businesses, it happens often.
And it's because there's not enough diversification of duties. There's not enough people doing different things to catch a fraud easily. And so I know that you and I often tell people, usually a thief is not a very good investor. They don't invest the stolen money in blue chip stocks. So once it happens to you, you're probably never going to see that money again, or very little of it.
Well, that's right. And one thing that you should do, speaking of not seeing the money again, is make sure that your employees that are in positions where they could perpetrate fraud are insured so that at least you can mitigate any damages that occur. But the most important thing to do is to put in place controls that will keep people from stealing your money.
For example, we'll go in and we'll do a fraud deterrence study for an organization. I actually call that an efficiency study because nobody likes the F word. The fraud word is kind of a scary word. But we'll go in and there's many organizations out there that can do this kind of thing for you. And they'll look at your controls as they exist today. How do your processes work? How do you bill? How do you receive cash? How do you pay your payables? Who has authority to sign your checks or move money around? Document all of those processes so that you can understand how things are really flowing, because guess what? What you think is happening most likely is not really happening that way.
Well, we've never gone into an organization that the process has worked exactly the way the company thought they did.
Yes. So if you understand where and how the documents are flowing and the money's flowing within your organization, then you can see where the opportunities for a fraud to occur exist. And even a mistake can go undetected for a while. And sometimes that's what happens. An employee makes a mistake, it's not caught, and they say, oh, well, nobody's paying any attention. I can just do that again, or we'll do it again. And so as a result, that's oftentimes how frauds start.
Well, that's right. It starts with something small, and then when they get away with it, they keep doing more and more until it gets to be so big that they're caught. But as you mentioned, you usually don't recover those funds.
That's right. So just pay attention. Sometimes you just have to think like a thief. How would you steal if you were going to steal money within your organization? For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, I think an issue that's facing so many of us these days as the demographic ages, I know certainly this is affecting me in my life, your mother's aging as well, the whole idea of making sure that our financial plans are on path and that we have good estate plans in place, especially given the fact that the estate rules have all changed over the last several years.
Well, you know, Crystal, financial plans and estate plans, and really you can throw in business plans, are often things that are done with a great deal of time and effort and thought and then put in a drawer and not looked at again. And all of those plans need to be reviewed periodically. I would say at least annually you should look at your financial plan and determine, are you on track? Does it still make sense? Have there been circumstances that have changed? Have your goals changed? You know, do the investment strategies still make sense? You really need to review those. And probably if you're married, you should be reviewing those with your spouse so that you're both on the same page.
Yeah, it's really amazing to me how many spouses aren't in the conversation together. Generally, one spouse tends to take care of that. And God forbid if something happened to that person, suddenly the other spouse just sometimes really doesn't know what to do. So it's very important to jointly talk about these issues.
Well, there is, because there's a pretty good chance that the spouses won't die at the same time, and therefore one of them is going to be left. And if they're not the one that's familiar with all the finances, they're going to have a hard time getting their arms around it, as we know, because we've tried to help people with that.
And certainly estate planning is another critical area that people need to take a look at. Certainly if you haven't had your documents, your wills, your trusts, that kind of thing updated for a while, talk to your attorney. Make sure that your attorney has reviewed those, because there's been so many changes over the last several years that could really have an impact. Strategies may need to be completely revised because some of the changes that's occurred.
Well, and even if you have less than $10 million, which means that you'll probably escape estate tax on a federal and state level, depending on where you live, you still may need to talk to an expert and review your plan, make sure that your documents are in good order so that things transfer where they should, and make sure that it's the least expensive way to transfer assets.
And clearly, if you're a business owner and part of your estate includes your business, you absolutely need to take a look at your plans. Take a look at your business. What's the value of your business? Has it grown? How do you plan on transferring it? How can you transfer it with the least cost tax-wise?
And oh, by the way, who's going to run the business if you're running it?
That's a conversation for a whole nother segment. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Scott Jacobs. Scott is the executive director at Queen City Angels. And Scott, I know Queen City Angels has been part of the entrepreneurial investment landscape in Cincinnati for quite a while. There's lots of other people involved in this in various ways. How does Queen City Angels fit into that entrepreneurial landscape?
Thanks, Tom. We actually work with a lot of the other partners in sort of the entrepreneurial eco-landscape. Organizations like the Brandery, Centrifuge, Cincy Tech, Innovate for Health, UC's Tech Accelerator, UpTech, GCVA, the Greater Cincinnati Venture Association, and the Hamilton County Business Center, which was recently named the number one incubator in the state. So we work with all these organizations to help entrepreneurs. So the idea is any entrepreneur can find the resources they need in order to get the advice they need to get a business plan written or to get their business scaled or to get investment. So we share information amongst the partners in the ecosystem, and we do everything out to help entrepreneurs and startups to be successful.
If you're an entrepreneur and you have a business that you've just recently started and you're going to need capital, how would they go about seeking funding from Queen City Angels?
Well, we have a fairly well-defined process for that, Tom. We actually ask the entrepreneur to fill out an application. There's a nominal application fee, and they submit a 5-page executive summary. I review that executive summary, make sure that it's got all the information necessary, and then it goes before our screening committee, and we get two or three angel investors that will take an hour with the entrepreneur, listen to their business model, listen to their value proposition, find out what it is that they're seeking. And then from that point forward, we have a screening report that's written, and then that's presented to all of our angel members.
Well, and if the entrepreneur doesn't know how to put together all that information for you, a good place for them to go is the boot camp that you've got coming up.
That is an extensive two-day program where an entrepreneur can learn everything they need to know in order to write a business plan or make their business investable.
That sounds great. Scott, if people want more information about Queen City Angels or about the boot camp, where's the best place to contact you?
Best place to contact me as it relates to the boot camp is qcabootcamp.com. And if someone wants to email me to find out more information, they can email me at sjacobs@qca.com.
Well, Scott, thanks for that great information, and thanks for everything Queen City Angels does for the entrepreneurial community. For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. I'm just delighted to have as my guest today my partner, Chuck Stevens. Chuck is a partner with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, and I know, Chuck, you do a lot of different things, but one of your specialties is valuations. You are not only a certified valuation analyst, you're even a step higher in that you're an accredited in business valuations. And I know personally you do a ton of them. So let's talk about some of the reasons why a business owner may want to have a valuation.
Sure. There can be any number of reasons. One thing in our practice that we see a lot of are gift and estate tax valuations. So people planning to, in their succession plans, to make gifts to their children if they want to bring the next generation into the business, they need to determine a value of what that gift is, or to consider what the value is in their overall estate so they can determine whether or not they're going to have a taxable estate. Some other reasons include, been working a lot lately on divorce cases.
Well, it's not such a good topic, but
no,
it happens, right?
It happens. And so when there's a divorce, there's a need to value an interest in a closely held business oftentimes. And it's not as simple as pulling out the Wall Street Journal or going to Yahoo Finance and putting in a ticker symbol when you're dealing with smaller, closely held companies. And so,
and don't forget about the emotions that get in the way of good common sense.
Plenty of those in the divorce cases. Some other reasons are to prepare yourself for a potential exit down the road. Maybe that exit you want to do sooner rather than later, but the earlier you plan, the more opportunity you have to make changes in the direction of that business. So if you think, I may want to retire in 5 years, it could be a really good step to take a look at that today and say, okay, what is it worth today? What can I do to make it worth more down the road? If it is worth X amount in 5 years, is that going to be enough for me to retire and live off of the way that I, you know, maintain the lifestyle I'd like to have?
You know, Chuck, I think we both can agree that our clients, and not just our clients, but most business owners, they've got this emotional tie to their business. And oftentimes they think their business is worth a whole lot more than maybe what a third party might think it is.
That's right.
So really having a valuation can be a litmus test in checking your own yourself in terms of what the business is really worth from an objective point of view.
Right. Well, you and I both know what it means to pour your sweat equity
Absolutely.
Into building a business. And so when you do that, you do have a very strong emotional attachment to that business. So sometimes you might think that it's worth millions of dollars, but to an outside third party, maybe it's not worth anywhere near that. And so having an objective party come in and take a look and say, okay, here's what I think it's worth today, and here's why, can kind of help you get grounded in what you might actually realize upon a sale.
It just makes good business sense to have a valuation for your business. If you've not done one, you should really talk to your outside advisors and see what you can do to get a better perspective of what your company's worth. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Chuck Stevens. Chuck is actually my partner in Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens. And Chuck, you are a certified valuation analyst. You're also accredited in business valuations. And I know firsthand you do a lot of them.
That's right.
So let's talk about some of the things that maybe a business owner may not realize that could really hurt the value of their business. For example, let's just say you have a business owner who is quite successful, but when you really look under the covers, their revenue sources are really from maybe two or three primary clients, which might sound good to have some really big clients, but from a valuation standpoint, it could hurt them, couldn't it?
Well, it could. You know, one of the things that we look at when we're determining the value of a business is, first of all, what kind of cash is it generating, right? Because you want to know ultimately what it's putting in your pocket. But in addition to that, it's what are the risks involved with achieving that cash flow? And so in your case, where you have a high customer concentration, what happens if one of those customers goes away? That cash flow could end tomorrow if you're relying on this one big customer and suddenly you have a value of zero for this business. Some other reasons could be if you have a single product line. Something else comes out with technological advancement, and all of a sudden your product's no longer relevant. Again, it's much more risk as opposed to if you have a broad product line. If you're selling into a single industry, what if you were selling into the housing industry shortly before the housing bubble? Well, guess what? Nobody'd be buying your product. And so having customer diversification, industry diversification, product diversification, all those things tend to reduce the amount of risk associated with achieving those cash flows into the future, thereby increasing the business value.
And that's the key, isn't it? Cash flows into the future, because a buyer wants to buy your future cash flows. It's nice that you did well in the past, but it's really about what the cash flow going forward is.
That's right. We often look to the past only as it relates to what we can expect in the future, because that buyer is only going to have available to them those future cash flows. So they don't care what you put in your pocket. They want to know what's going to be in their pocket.
That's right. So if someone listening today is interested in evaluation, or at least starting down the process, how do you recommend that they go about that?
First, they should talk to some of their advisors. They're in organizations like CEO Roundtables. Talk to other businesses, particularly similar businesses. Oftentimes, there are kind of industry benchmarks. And then also look for credentialed valuation experts.
Chuck, thanks very much. And if folks listening would like to get in touch with Chuck, what is your email?
My email is cstevens@cfscpa.com. It's cstevens@cfscpa.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Allison Head. Allison is the owner of a franchise called Everywhere You Go. It's a very unique franchise, Allison, in that it really has a captive market in terms of its audience. You help business owners put their message out in a very creative way in what you call captive spaces, such as restrooms, for example, right?
Yes, that is correct.
And so if you're going to the Reds game, for example, you will see a lot of your customers and your work in the Reds restrooms and other spaces that might provide for a captive audience.
Yes, very captive and creative.
And you've had this business for, what, 8 years or so, you said?
Yes, January of 2007.
Right before the downturn in the economy. And clearly, those of us who are in the business world know that those who survive are really very successful. They've had to do things. They've had to step out of their box, really create energy and sustainability so that they could survive the recession. But I always find it fascinating when people who start their business right as the recession was beginning. How do you feel like you were able to weather that storm, create this business, and certainly thrive through it?
Perseverance, and I'm very stubborn is how I would word it, but you just have to keep going, and you truly have to believe. You have to believe in a lot of things, not only just yourself, but obviously your product, and then the passion comes out.
Well, and you've grown up in an entrepreneurial family. This is the first business that you've personally run, but you certainly have been surrounded, correct, your whole life with entrepreneurs?
Yes, very much so. And it is a risk. It always is a risk, but I think a lot of things in life are risk. And if you're living, it's not mm-hmm. worth not taking a risk.
And you also, certainly, I was looking at some of your background, your resume. You've had a very interesting background. You've been in sales. You do a lot of, you went to school here at Northern Kentucky as well. You played tennis, but you were an actress. You are on a number of boards, a lot of nonprofits. You're a speaker. So you're very high energy, very enthusiastic, it appears to me, as you approach your business and your life. What value, how do you think that has impacted your business?
I think it's impacted on a huge scale. People really, at the end of the day, I think people buy into you and they invest in you. So it also has to go past that. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about passion, it has to work, and I have to truly believe in it. And it's not a matter of just convincing you, because that's short term. Most everything I do is invest it in long term.
Well, Allison, thank you for being my guest and for everything you do. And if folks would like to learn more about Everywhere You Go and the unique method that you help businesses advertise and put their message forth, what is your contact information?
It's Everywhere You Go with the letter U, go.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.